That I became a Christian in my teens. I wasn't from a Christian family, but the brother of a friend of my sister's invited me on a camp, and as a result of which I was challenged and became a Christian in my teenage years. I was a mathematics teacher and a secondary head teacher, and then, as I've mentioned, being all that stuff. Anybody into Myers-Briggs? I'm an extreme ENFP. You'll know what ENFPs. Just for the rest of you, well done. Are you? Blood brothers, yes. Okay, good. Right. You won't concentrate on this tonight at all, will you? Because if you're an ENFP, your mind flits from one. The prayer of an ENFP is, Lord, help me to focus on one thing at a time. Oh, look, there's a bird. You know. So if you, June will send me to make the tea on a Saturday morning, and after half an hour she'll shout down, where's the tea? By which time the tea is stewed in the pot, but I'm midway through cleaning the oven. You know. So no focus at all. I'm highly intuitive. That's the positive side of it. Anyway, enough of that. More important to talk about positive parenting, Christian charities serving the statutory and voluntary sectors. Not explicitly Christian. It works with people of all faiths and none. But those are the values that underpin it, working across social and cultural boundaries. So we have courses in Punjabi and Urdu and Arabic and so on. Been around for over 40 years. I say it was born in inner city Portsmouth, but now part of the Care for the Family, which has its head office in Cardiff, but local hubs across the UK. I'm very proud of the Isle of Man one, quite active there. So positive parenting, not me personally, but we've been running parenting workshops for over 30 years in different locations. And positive parenting courses, they're very accessible. If you look at the handbooks outside, you'll see, you know, they're simple, lots of cartoons. I'll give you a flavour as we go through. I'll tell you a little bit in a moment about what I'm planning to do. Very visual. We're preventative. These are universal courses. These are for all parents. We're not sort of particularly focused at high-end, heavy problems. These are not medical interventions. These are not, you know, these heavyweight, they're not treatments. Ours is certainly not the super nanny approach. I mean, I'll watch the opposite super nanny program and I think they're entertaining, but our style is not about making, you know, humiliating people, making them feel inadequate and so on. It's actually quite the opposite. We want to encourage people and support people. So it's universal, which means, of course, that you do have people with, you know, heavy family problems. But you have a complete mix, and it's great fun and realistic. So parent to parent, yes, June and I have been trained to present and facilitate positive parenting courses, and we understand a little bit of the research, but we don't pretend to be experts. It's very much parent to parent. One of the early things we do in courses is, well, after people have introduced themselves and said how old their children are, we ask them what they've come to get out of the course, what do they want to get from it, and make that up, and then we ask, and then what have you come to give? And there's that stunned silence. But I've been totaling, because I was a sums man, I've been totaling the ages of their children. So I say, well, we had four children we fostered for a while. Let's say we've got 80 years of parenting experience. You've got 371 years of parenting experience. Where's most of the ideas going to come from? We're going to learn from you. You're going to learn from one another. If you learn something from us as well, that's a bonus. You know, it's just so people come and that actually, I've got something to share and so on, and then quickly discover that the things they're grappling with, most other parents are grappling with as well. We've always been about relationship. Positive parenting from its beginning, when it probably wasn't aware of the research there's been in the last, certainly, you know, last 20 or so years, obviously Eccles was 40 years ago, but has believed that the key was about the quality of relationships between the parent and the child. I'm pleased to say that later research shows that to be the case. It hasn't stopped previous governments in focusing on strategies and techniques and all the other stuff. And we do get to that. We do cover that in the courses we run. But the first half of the course, at least, is about the quality of the relationship, children's emotional needs and boosting that before we get to the things about the tricks of the trade, as it were. Respect for individual, one size doesn't fit all. There we are. So positive parenting courses, actually, I've just discovered that the names of these are going to change. They're all going to come under the banner of Time Out for Parents. So the Time Out for Parents was the original course. Then Time Out for Teenagers came second. Time Out for Juniors is, it says Time Out for Parents for parents of younger children. Time out for teenagers. Children become teens about the age of 9, you'll know these days. So 9 to 16. Then that, an extra course is put in for those primary school years. So these are going to be called time out for parents dash the primary years, time out for parents dash the teenage years. So the title will change a bit. Then there's various special needs courses. Well, the bottom one isn't really special needs, except I think dads are special. Dads are special in the sense that they all have parents' handbooks, except dads, because dads don't read. But we do also run Time Out for Dads. I run Time Out for Dads with another dad in Fleet, and we do the Time Out for Parents and Time Out for Teenagers on a regular basis. But the other four special needs courses, Time Out for Autistic Spectrum Disorders, including, you know, Asperger's and high-functioning autism. I'm sure I'd have been diagnosed with high-functioning autism. I've got many other traits. Time Out for Attention Deficit Hyperactivity Disorder, which was never known of 10 years ago anyway. It's now mushrooming. We've got some theories about why that might be and why young children watching a lot of television is such a dangerous thing. It's probably the impact, rapidly changing images and all that sort of stuff. Time Out from Anger. That's normally about parental anger as well as child anger, actually. So those courses as well. And then Care for the Family, they have their courses. They actually are parenting courses, the top two. How to drug-proof your kids, but it's actually a disguised parenting course, but focusing on, you know, drug awareness and boosting relationships with children to keep them protected from getting into drug taking and other negative behaviours. Quids In, about raising financially confident kids. They're just bringing out a new course in the Time Out series that's going to be particularly focused on the early years, the 0 to 4s. So that's just coming as well. And as I say, with each of these is a parent's handbook. They're available outside. He says, advertising. One extra one, the one at the bottom, not very well named, I think, is Time Out for Special Parents. It's actually a behaviour management guide, but it's more really focused on the high-end problems. People have got really major problems in behaviour. That one may help. I thought it might be helpful. This isn't, it's sort of from one of the, it's part of the training we're doing. I'm not sure I even use it now, but I find this really helpful. It was from a consultant that did some work with positive parenting a little while back. This isn't the house that Jack built, but it's the house that built Jack. So Jack's lazing around on the street corner in his hoodie. He's coping with all the things he has to cope with, life at home, life down the street, what's happening in the school, the cultural influences on him, you know, all these various factors, what his mates are doing, what's happening in the media, or, you know, the teenage gangs, all the other things of life. But all you see is Jack above the waterline. What you don't see is what's below. Actually, houses are not built on waterlines, are they? So what's below the ground, he says, mixing or correcting his metaphor. And at the bottom of this slightly truncated slide, can you see temperament and personality there? 50% of Jack is in his genes, spelt with a G. In other words, you know, what he's inherited. And not a lot of that you can do about that. You can possibly modify temperament and personality, but you're not going to change it. If you've got a Typhoon Tim temperament, they're never going to become an Easy Pete. They're always going to be a Typhoon Tim type. In the work that Julia originally did, she called this temperament and character. And actually, I thought, no, that's not right, because you can build character, you can develop character. Character, I think, is about when to the temperament is added the values that you have for your family, then you get the character. And by the time I got back in touch with Juliet and got to get permission to use this, I said, actually, I've actually changed it a bit. She said, yes, so have I. And we both independently changed it in the same way, which is quite reassuring. So temperament, the traits you were born with, can be modified but not changed. You know, for years, sociologists were arguing about whether the outcomes for children were based on their nature, in other words, what they inherited, or were they based on their nurture, how they were brought up. And quite a few studies were based on the unusual situation of twins that were split at birth and brought up in different circumstances, rather like Blood Brothers, if you've seen the show in London. Presumably the nature was the same, but the nurture was different. There has been a revolution in what we understand about this in the last 15 years or so through MRI scanning. Our new baby granddaughter went into Basingstoke Hospital probably 10 days ago now, because there were concerns that she may have inadequate hearing in one ear, and so they put on this tiny baby headphones in and played sounds into each ear in turn and watched the brain respond. Now, in the old days, there was a shortage of children's brains to dissect and examine, thankfully. But now they can watch the brain develop. And we now know that when a mother holds a baby and cuckoos and smiles and interacts with it, connections start making in the brain that don't make otherwise. We know now that brains are not fully formed until they're 25 years old, which is why both my sons wrote off cars in their first month of driving. One wrote his own off, the other wrote another car that was harmlessly parked at the side of the road. Only about 300 yards from our house on a route that he didn't need to go, but it had nice bends on it, so he thought he'd try. Never mind, we don't go. But the brain recovers. You know, when it doesn't have all the stimulus that it should have, somehow, you know, when you can correct things, the brain can correct itself and remake connections and drop other connections and so on. It's quite stunning how the brain develops. And because we've got these wonderful machines that allow us to look at the brains and observe them being formed, it's quite stunning what we've discovered. I'm not an expert on that, but I just get excited. Well, I've got excited colleagues who talk about it, and then they enthuse me. Then there's attachment. We understand how important it is that parents and children attach. I've just realised I haven't actually talked to you about what I'm going to do yet, have I? And I'm well into it now. Is that all right? Well, I'm going to sort of give you a flavour of the sort of stuff that positive parenting does in its training and its parenting courses. And then the second half, we'll talk a little bit about the state of the nation and what the role of the church or the rest of us might be in terms of parenting support and how we might take things on. That's the sort of idea, okay? So a little bit, I'm just going through. It's a conceptual model, just to give you some ideas. So attachment. I mean, I was not allowed to be in at the birth of either of my first two children. I'm sure I would be today. The first was a bit of a miracle baby. She had a 50-50 chance of being of survival. She was at one of the few hospitals of the day that had incubators, and she was 3¼ pounds when she was born. And because it was a cesarean under full anaesthetic, which wouldn't be full anaesthetic, I think, now, you know, I had to stay outside. Second son, I think it was forceps or some other complication, and I had to wait outside. 29-hour delivery. I mean, it's really tough being a dad, you know? And it was only with the last two children that I was able to be in. But now dads need to be involved because attachment with the father is almost as important as attachment with the mother. And so attachment, that bond, that strong, long-lasting emotional tie, particularly that's formed between the ages of 6 months and 3 years. A couple from our church came to see us a couple of months back because they've got particular problems with their daughter. I mean, we don't pretend to be experts. You know, we have to say, look, we're not experts. We're still sort of come around, you know, can you? And they talk to us. But as they were talking, it just came up that the mother had been in and out of hospital for a period of a couple of years. And the penny started dropping. I said, well, how old was she at this stage? Lo and behold, it was during this 6 months to 3 years time. And when I actually sort of did what we all do, Googled attachment deficit disorder, lo and behold, out came the behaviours that they'd been describing. And I was able to say, look, we're not an expert, but it may be that, you know, and we could send them off to some more professional, intelligent person to give them a diagnosis. But it's really important during this time, these internal connections, the internal working model, as it's called, are being made. Secure attachment in children, the research tells us, gives these sort of outcomes I think that we would all want for our children. So that's attachment. Then there's three pillars. The first pillar is meeting the child's physical needs, the things without which you'd be talking about neglect. So food and diet and rest and sleep, safety and security. So the nurture, but children don't just have physical needs, children have emotional needs as well. This is a list from that we use quite helpfully, not ours, but of emotional needs that we all have, not just children. And we encourage parents to think about their children and any of these emotional needs as we describe them and think about them that might need boosting in their children, and they might make that the focus, or they will make that the focus of, when they go home in between sessions. The importance of this, the warmth of that relationship. Okay, we all have complex emotional needs, need to be met. When they're met, you get good outcomes. When they're not met, you don't get good outcomes. So that's that love one. The final one is the need for discipline. And what behaviour is expected or allowed? What are the values? What are the boundaries that we're putting in here? And what we want parents to have is a structured lifestyle that gives children some discipline, some boundaries. Social learning, a very simple but very powerful theory. Essentially, what it says that if you reward good behaviour, you get more good behaviour. If you don't reward good behaviour, you get less good behaviour. Now, if you don't reward negative behaviour, you get less negative behaviour. If you do reward negative behaviour, you get more negative behaviour. Who on earth would reward negative behaviour? I would. You would. The child plays up. No. Why? No. Tantrum. No. Tantrum. All right, then. And you change your whatever, and the child learns if they play up, if they put on a tantrum, if they make a big enough fuss, they'll get you to change your mind. And you reward bad behaviour. You don't intend to, but inevitably you're going to get more tantrums and more playing up and so on. So the child's ignored and only gets attention when they act up. What's the child learning about behaviour? What are you rewarding? Because children do what works. The good news is that behaviour is learned, and therefore it can be unlearned. When parents can change their behaviour, it's quite likely the child in response will change theirs. And Stephen Scott, who is the professor of parenting, believe it or not, there is a professor of parenting at London University who was the research officer for the National Academy of Parenting Practitioners, and he is very strong in saying, you know, the studies, that hundreds of studies confirm the effectiveness of social learning theory. So we've got these three pillars, but the truth is that some children are deficient in one or more of these pillars. And the structure of these foundations is a bit rocky. But I can tell you from my own experience as a head teacher that incredibly some children cope remarkably well and come out as well-adjusted, socialised, pleasant individuals through that, while other children who endure far less social upheaval are completely shattered and completely thrown and turn out to be a complete mess. And the fact is, because there is something in them that's about resilience. I don't know that we know a lot about resilience, but we know that some children are more resilient than others. We know there's a strong link with self-esteem, which I'll perhaps come to later. But I think that's quite a helpful conceptual model when you're thinking about parenting. We work in running parenting courses in these last two pillars. In the one about emotional needs, where what we want is warmth, and in the one about discipline needs, where we want structure. And those two pillars are about parenting style. Parenting style is what it's called, the way we bring up our children. And I've just realised there's a particular slide I wished I'd put in here before I got to this point. What's the goal of parenting? To raise children or to raise adults? Because there are some people who raise children. You notice when they get to university, because they live on baked beans and toast. I see them in Fleet High Street, because those that are raising children hold on to the children's arms and say, right, stay with me, right, off we go. Whereas those that are raising adults might say, is this a safe place to park? You tell Daddy when you think it's safe to cross. If I was looking after your children and we were walking on a clifftop, I would be between them and the danger. They would have to stay on the path. But when I was raising my children, while June held the baby, I had the other three on their tummies and we wriggled up to the edge of the cliff to look over. because I wanted them to be risk-aware, but not risk-averse. And when we were walking through the woods up on our heath, I'd be saying, do you think you can climb that tree? I'll be at the bottom, I'll catch you. You know, because I'm raising adults. And when I was doing things on the car, who wants to come with me? And when we were going on the train, what train we're going to catch? You sort it out. Because although, well, I'll tell you when we come to parenting style, if I get back on my script, that my childhood was not particularly happy. My father didn't, and parents didn't have the best parenting style. It was quite harsh, quite heavy-handed. But my dad did things with me and gave me opportunities to develop. For example, whenever we went out in the car, I navigated. I learnt to love maps. I always found the shortest route. I assumed the shortest route was best. We lived in West London, in Perivale, you know, on the A40 near Hoover Building, now Tesco's, of course. But we knew this area, because when we were going to Cornwall, we didn't go round the old A30. There's a big loop there. We went the straight way. There was a B road through Overton that came out to Andover, and we could cut the corners. And my dad always went where I told him to go. He gave me power and controls, part of a, you know, it's a legitimate need for somebody who's raising adults. Okay, we did end up at the end of some dead ends and across some very muddy fields from time to time. But by the time my dad worked for Castrol, by the time I was 12 or 13, they had a very good motor club in the days when you could do rallying on public roads. And I navigated for him, and we won a lot of cups, because I was pretty ace at navigating, because my dad had raised me to... Can you see what I'm saying? Raising adults. When you get the concept of raising adults, it changes the way you parent. And sometimes we run a six-week course, and in about a quarter of an hour into the first session, you say that question, what's the goal of raising parents? And we just introduce the idea of raising adults. And some parents, at the end of the 6 weeks, look back, what's been the main thing? And they go back to that very first session had made the biggest difference. When our daughter was about 14, we stopped giving her pocket money. We gave her an allowance. So that everything that she wanted, that she needed, she had to buy herself, apart from her school uniform. That was all that we bought. So wherever she went, whatever she wanted to buy, if she wanted to go anywhere, she paid for it. She had an allowance paid into the bank, and she had a plastic card, and she could get the money out. She wouldn't let it go overdrawn, the new magic machines they had at the front of banks. She was managing her own money. The next one down, Simon, he was only about... It wasn't long after this. He must have been 12 or 13. And he was nagging us to give him Nike trainers. They were about 85 quid. One income, four children. We were struggling to make ends meet. There was no way we could spend 85 quid on... But, you know, all the rest of his friends, they'd all got Nike trainers. He had to have Nike trainers. You know, this was been going on. And then one night I said, right, you can have an allowance like your sister. A little bit earlier now. You like your sister, and you decide. He went to bed that night, came down the next morning, and over breakfast he said, I've decided not to buy the Nike trainers. I'm going to save up and buy a drum kit. And he went to school and told his friends, I'm not buying Nike trainers, I'm saving up to buy... He's a very good drummer now. And do you know, we've given this trick to parents. They come back to us at the end of course. They said, it's brilliant. She said, and it's cheaper. Yeah. So we've done it with our other two children. I mean, I think we're fourth child. We did it from about the age of 11 because we're raising adults. And I've got to tell you, they're all now married and managing their own budgets. They are brilliant. I mean, better than we were at managing their own money because they've been doing it for, you know, making their own... Anyway, sorry, I'll get sidetracked. Back to parenting style, the way in which parents affects our children's behaviour. One of the key factors that affects good outcomes to children, the other two key factors, well, the three key factors... The research tells us that children tend to do better in families where parents use an assertive parenting style, means both warm and structured. Get the link back to the conceptual model, the emotional needs and the discipline needs. The other factors, if you're interested, are children do better in families where the parents stay together, and they do better in families where conflict is at a low level. Obviously, sadly, sometimes those two things become a bit mutually exclusive, but those are the three key factors affecting outcomes for children. And they also are the things that appear high up in the causes of stress amongst young people. Conflict at home and worry about parents splitting up. higher than some of the other things that parents worry more about. Will my child get a job, or are they getting bullied, or and so on? So here is a parenting style. This is the way that positive parents... I said we do things visually. How do you think this sheep feels? Hemmed in. Sorry, we have to participate here in this bit. Sorry, you haven't got a microphone.
Isolated.
Isolated. Just a cracking one. I don't normally get that one. Very good, though. I like that.
Safe.
Sorry?
Safe.
Safe. Positive, yes. You can see what parenting style you had. Suppose this was a particularly shy or sensitive sheep. What's likely to be the impact?
Lonely.
Likely to be crushed. Become introverted. Yeah, can you see it? What happens if they were a particularly spirited sheep? Well, a dad said to me on a dad's course once, he immediately responded, he said, well, that pen will be matchwood in 5 minutes. There's going to be a conflict, isn't there? This was the parenting style that I experienced, authoritarian, or as we use, say, aggressive parenting. The sort of kind of parent that expects to be obeyed without question, that was me. It's the sort of teacher I became as well. Expected, instant obedience, liked to be in control, winning more important than relationship. My son might only have been 2 when I was playing football in the back garden, but there's no way he was going to win. I'm saying this to my shame. This is what it looks like for parents of younger children. It might be okay when they're very young. They might need it. But if children are bossed about all the time, they'll get damaged. If you've got a typhoon, Tim, there's going to be more power struggles. These may actually be children that when you see them going around the supermarket, these compliant, goody-goody children, you might think, wow, what wonderful parents they might be. Just relax. Their day is coming. Those children will go through the teenage years, and if they stay this good, compliant child in teenage years, the consequences may come later. One of the dads on the dad course, when he was doing these, he said he'd applied to go on a management course in his company. He'd been rejected, and he'd been to got some feedback on it. He wanted to know why he'd been rejected, and they said, well, you never show any initiative. And while he was doing the parenting course, it suddenly occurred to him, he'd never had any opportunity to show any initiative. He'd had this style of parenting, and his life had completely run for him, as was mine. I perhaps was a bit more spirited. My parents insisted, I went upstairs. I had no choice whether I did homework or not. I was sent upstairs. I had to do my homework. Well, tell you the truth, I wasn't doing my homework. I was writing letters to girlfriends or talking out the window to friends, but I was supposed to be doing my homework. But I went to college to train to be a teacher, and I was suddenly free, went completely off the rails. I did no work for 3 years. I got, I did it all in the last 3 weeks because I'd never learnt any self-discipline, personal organisation or any other things because I'd been raised as a child. But, all the pressure that I'd been under. Anyway, so compliant children may obey out of fear but resent the parents deep down. The older children normally makes teenagers worse, be a lot of arguments. Power struggles, sensitive children will be squashed. May appear to submit on the outside, would inwardly resent the parents. I need to tell you that there are actually 2 subtypes of aggressive or authoritarian parenting. There's warm aggressive, which is, I think, what I had. I did know my parents loved me. And that's not a disaster. The disaster is cold aggressive, where there's no emotional warmth. And authoritarian aggressive parenting. This is another parenting style. There's 2 types of this as well. I'll tell you in a minute. How does this sheep feel? Lost? Abandoned? Alone? Lonely? The next word will generally be uncared for, and then somebody will say unloved. That's how that normally goes. This is a passive or permissive parenting. There are 2 types of this. There's the sort of liberal, Go and explore the world. Do your own thing. Don't let anyone say no. A nightmare in school, you know. No compliance to the rules. And actually, probably a bit of a nightmare at home as well. And in the world, you know, no boundaries for them. They're going to do their own thing. It's not an easy life. They will have some pretty wild behaviours. They'll have the most extreme, you know, in harmless areas like fashion. You know, this is where your goths come from generally and so on. But, you know, in other more serious areas, so no boundaries at all. That liberal style isn't helpful, may not be a disaster. What is a disaster is the other end of the spectrum with the passive parenting, which is, I can't cope. I don't know what to do. Just go, do what you like, but don't get into trouble. And there's a lot of children in the UK, sadly, who have that sort of parenting. The parents have just given up. They just cannot cope. It's a bit of a disaster. Permissive parents. We, most of us, replicate the parenting style that we experienced. I might ask you in a little while, how many of you will that be true? Because this is a reasonably large sample, I can probably guess it will be true for something like 75-80% of you. But there will be some of you, 10-20% of you, perhaps 25%, who will have gone to the other extreme, who resented the parenting style that you were brought up in, knew it wasn't the best, and so you decided and you went to another parenting style that was actually equally ineffective, equally unhelpful. But, you know, our tendency is, because children sadly don't come with instructions, and if they did, dads wouldn't read them anyway. We don't read them. I don't know where I was going there. What was I talking about? Never mind. Permissive parenting. Maybe they just don't like saying no. Yeah, we tend to replicate the parenting. Yeah. Perhaps they feel they've lost control, don't know what else to do, might be too busy. The sad fact, though, is that if we don't put in the boundaries, someone else will. Maybe in school, maybe on the street. It'll certainly be when they get their first job. And it probably won't last long. Nor will the second job. Nor will the third. Until they become unemployable because they haven't learnt to work within reasonable boundaries. An employer is going to be much less patient with them than a teacher might be. That cartoon has brought young men to tears in a young offenders institution where this was used in a positive parenting course. Positive possible effects. Young person's going to feel unloved, disconnected. If nobody cares, nobody loves, which is why you get the bottom one, you know, that going to extremes of behaviour, because surely somebody's going to say, maybe not conscious, but subconsciously, someone somewhere is going to have to say no, because if there are no boundaries, nobody cares, and I want to be loved, and nobody loves. You know, so you get these shocking things. Certainly, much more likely they're going to get involved in negative behaviours, in gangs, and so on. So, not a great one. Here's the model that we'd like. These are the three basic parenting styles. There are other styles that you need to come on a parenting course, teenagers course, tell you about that one. Freedom within limits. Isn't this a happy picture? Assertive parenting style. If this was on the teenager's course, the field would be slightly larger and the gate would be open because you'll keep a 5-year-old in, you won't keep a 15-year-old in. You may lock the door, but they'll be down the drain pipe, as was I, and off and away. But there's going to be consequences of going out through the gate or climbing over the fence. Because their boundaries are set, they've been given freedom, they've gone beyond the boundaries, and they're going to have to be consequences in assertive parenting. It's neither bossy nor permissive, gives freedom within limits. I had to change my parenting style as I developed as a parent, as June and I, you know, read a bit more about parenting and went on parenting courses and so on. We're willing to set boundaries and face temporary unpopularity, but teaches the child to take responsibility for their actions. This is what assertive parents are like. As the child gets older, they'll be prepared to negotiate some of these boundaries. Doesn't mean that they don't have an input at all. It doesn't mean the child sets their own boundaries, but there'll be a degree of discussion about them. These parents choose their battles. It's not worth fighting every battle. The negative impact of fighting battles, it becomes counterproductive. I think somebody once, it was Rob Parson, I heard him say once or something, that there was some research somewhere that said you could fight 80 battles a day if you really want to do, you know, taking your kid or anything. No. Model saying sorry. It was in Basingstoke, of course. I wasn't running it. One of that couple I was talking about, Camilla, was running a course at a primary school in Basingstoke. And halfway through one of the sessions that they were doing, they mentioned about that parents need to be able to say sorry to their children occasionally, to model saying sorry. And this mother said, "There's no way I could say sorry. I could never face my children again. I couldn't look them in the eye. You know, I'd be such a loss of, you know, I couldn't do it." As the evening went on, the penny dropped, and she suddenly announced to the rest of the class, "I'm going to go home now, wake my children up and tell them I'm sorry." A month later, she bumped into Camilla in, it was before the new fancy centre, but in the Basingstoke town centre, went up to go and say, "Hey, do you remember me?" And Camilla thought, "Oh, I'm not sure." "Oh, yeah." And explained how just that one tiny bit, had transformed their family life, where she'd learnt to say sorry and how it had changed the relationships in that family. So that's why we love running parenting courses and getting feedback from parents. These things change. This is what we're aiming at. Assertive parents, because young people with assertive parents are more likely to be the sort of things that you want your children to be. So the key message, there's the research if you're interested. Authoritative, we use the word assertive because authoritative gets mixed up with authoritarian. Authoritarian's bad, authoritative's good, assertive as is distinct from aggressive. Whatever the situation, you know, it's single parent, double parent, whatever style of family it is, you'll get the best outcomes with assertive parenting. So we get parents to aim to be assertive about being warm and structured. Well, let's have a couple of minutes, just have a chat to your neighbour. What sort of parenting did you experience? And what impact has it had on your life so far? Okay, sorry to cut you off. I mentioned that most of us will imitate the parenting style that we experienced. As you're reflecting about your own parenting style, and immediately you're saying, "Oh, well, this is nonsense. I can go from there to there. I'm all over the place." Yes, you probably are. We all are. But when the chips are down, when you're under stress, you will tend to revert to your favoured style. You'll tend to go one way or the other. If you're the sort of parent that stays calm and assertive, you don't end up shouting, you don't end up giving up, but you stay calm and assertive, then that's fine, that's you in the middle. I mean, how many of you would say that you as parents, those of you who are parents, are, or if you're not parents, in whatever else you do, are similar, you replicate what you experienced as a child? Just put your hand up. Okay, I think that's a majority. Might not be 75%, but it's certainly a majority. One, how many of those of you who would say, "I'm definitely not the same as my parents, I'm decided to do it very differently"? Okay, so you see a fairly natural, that, I don't think it's everyone, some of you are probably there. So we get parents to think about where they put themselves on that continuum, what style they most relate to, and where they'd like to be, and what action they might like to take. I think I'm probably running behind time. Am I? I'm going to whip. What time are we breaking? Are we? Okay. 5 minutes? This is going to be very quick. Self-esteem. I mean, this just to give you a flavour of our courses, okay? So please don't say in your evaluations, "Goodness me, it's far too fast," and so on. This is going to be self-esteem. We can all remember things that hurt us, foolish things that were said to us by a teacher or perhaps sadly by a parent that we still remember now, that affected us, because self-esteem is very easily damaged. We know that a positive self-esteem is really helpful. We struggled with on one income with four children, and when the boiler broke down, or there was suddenly a big bill on the car, it really threw us. You know, we were already maxing on our credit card limit, and you know, we got the mortgage to pay and so on. But when things were more comfortable, I still didn't welcome a £300 bill for the boiler or a £500 for the car, and I'd still complain, but we coped. Now, children are the same in their term emotional bank accounts. They're sort of love tanks. And if you've got a child where this is kept well topped up, incidentally, that's not a bomb, that's a pig. That's sorry, it's not yet. That is a sort of savings bank is the idea. For those of you who are getting nervous, all right? If you can keep their self-esteem well topped up, then when the negative things occur, as they will, they'll fall out with friends, or the teacher says something insensitive, or you move house and they lose their friends, or you have to be sharp with them because suddenly they've got to jump in the car and so on, or, you know, they'll get debits as well. It can come quite unexpectedly. Or grandmother dies, or the hamster dies, you know, or whatever it is. I don't know which of those is more important. But they'll cope if you've been topping up their love tank. So we encourage parents to top up that love tank with praise and kind words. Not just saying, well done. Several of these, quite a few of these, are descriptive praise, where you describe the positive behaviour. Another powerful sort of praise is overheard praise. I mean, if you at work, if your boss says to you, that was a great project you wrote there, thanks so much, that was brilliant, excellent, well done, you feel encouraged. If you happen to be passing her office and you hear her say to her boss, Lorna did a brilliant project on that, so on, that magnifies the praise 10 times, doesn't it? Overheard praise, as it magnifies overheard criticism. If a child hears a parent telling another, you know, friend about how difficult the child is or how she wished she'd never had this baby, it causes immense damage. Overheard praise or overheard criticism magnifies the power of it. But, you know, overheard praise, descriptive praise, very powerful. Having some house rules. One of the things with house rules is that they've got to apply to everyone. So when Dad goes out, he needs to say where he's going, who's he going to be with, what time he's coming back, you know, what he's going to be doing. But it's a house rule. And you can have a family meeting where you know, the children, you start off with getting everyone to say what they appreciate, what they enjoy about being part of this family, and they discuss what house rules they'd like to have. I want people knocking before they come into my bedroom. Okay. Do we all agree? Well, actually, Mum and Dad already have that house rule, so it's probably not a bad one for the rest of us. Shall we all agree that as a house rule, that we knock before we go into bedrooms and so on? So children, you know, they can help develop the house rules. Family meetings, eating together is terribly important. A lot of research showing that. A lot of children, a lot of families never eat together. It's grazing in front of the television. But eating together with the television off, communicating, children do better in school if they eat together. You know, you take out all the other variables, you know, even if it's only perhaps three times a week. Frequent family meals reduce the likelihood of drug abuse, mental health risks, depression, suicide, and obesity. Suicide's the second most common cause of death amongst young men. So eating together is really important. Routines, really important, particularly for younger children, particularly at times of change, particularly for children with special needs. We might talk about routines. Choices and consequences. Positive choices get positive consequences. So giving children choices, you know, from as early as you can. Do you want cornflakes or Cheerios? You know, showing respect by asking the opinion, giving them choices and so on. Because you, once they're outside the school gates and somebody says, do you want a bit of this? You want them to make good choices. They need to have had quite a bit of experience making choices on the way and knowing good choices get good outcomes and bad choices get bad outcomes. You want to protect your children. Consequences, ideally linked to the crime. When cycle helmets were extremely unfashionable, indeed mine was, I had a pink nylon cover, we insisted our children wore cycle helmets. So it was a house rule, we had to wear cycle helmets as too. And June said we had to do it because I'd insisted that children cycling to school wore cycle helmets, and that wasn't my idea. It's a, It was a parent governor who led the way. I think we were probably the first school in the world that said that children had to have psychoanalysis. Now, so my son, when he cycled to school, I mean, he could go perfectly reasonably on the school bus, but he wanted to go with his mate, so he cycled to school, so he had to wear his helmet. No, except I had a meeting at his school in Odeon one morning, and I overtook him on his way into school. There was his helmet dangling on his handlebars. So when he came home, we had a conversation about school. I happened to be in that evening, which probably meant it was a Friday night. How'd you get on in school today? Oh, fine. What'd you do? Not a lot. Normal sort of conversation. Did you go on the bus? No, I cycled. Do you wear your helmet? Dad, I always take my helmet. Did you wear your helmet? He then realises I know more than I know. Until quite recently, and he's now in his mid-30s, he thought that he'd been dobbed in it by his head teacher. He'd never noticed me overtaking him. I'd had the whole day to think of what the consequences were going to be. So you're now going to learn to drive at 17 years, 1 month. If I catch you again, it'll be 17 years, 2 months. He started going to school on the bus. And when he did go on his bike again, he never ever went without his helmet. And on his 17th birthday, he says, "I applied for my driving license not in hope, not in expectation." His birthday present was a framed forgiveness certificate, and on the back was the envelope with the voucher for his driving lessons. He had his first driving lesson that afternoon. Yes, we didn't relent on much, but there the sanction had done its trick. And when I meet parents who are close to giving up with their children, I say, you still have control of something that your child values. I'll tell you, a 13-year-old boy is desperately looking forward to driving, and you have that in your hand. He wasn't going to be driving his own car, he was going to be driving mine if he was going to be practicing. Don't threaten something you're not prepared to carry out. I've got a wonderful story, but no time. Making up afterwards, so after the year in which our other son, who'd been caught shoplifting in Guildford, and we told him he wouldn't go out on his own for a month and wouldn't go shopping on his own for a year, and then he and I had lunch out at McDonald's. It was a treat in those days, to celebrate the end of the sanction, which he'd accepted extremely well. If you're finding it hard to discipline, these are just a little summary. Work in your relationship, find lots of things to praise, make some outsource. Consistency, try and have a united front so the child's not playing off one against another. Follow through with the sections. Expect a hassle. Parenting's a hassle. Get some support. Shall we have a break?
Yes, coffee break. So we'll have a... Thank you very much, Ken. We'll have a 20-minute coffee break, and you've got bookstall.
I have counted you. I must tell you, the bookstall.
Books,
yeah. Can I recommend a few? For those of you who are in the church, do you know Rob Parsons?
Yes,
I mean, the story
yes.
of Care for the Family, this is another 3 minutes.
Right.
Care for the founder of Care for the Family, Rob Parsons, was a very successful family lawyer. He was a partner of a big practice in Cardiff. And one day at a partners' meeting, he announced the other partners that he was not going to spend the rest of his life presiding over family breakdown. He wanted to use his life more creatively, and he'd like to start a charity supporting family life. The other partners backed him. They gave him a floor of the offices. They provided some secretarial help, and Care for the Family was born. Some of you will have heard Rob Parsons speak because he's spoken to over 500,000 people. He's got lots of books. I've got my, I don't read. My financial advisor, who's one of my, one of our youth club, he says, I never read except Rob Parsons. He's so readable. He is brilliant in telling stories. But how to get your kids through church without them ending up hating God. If you're in the church, if you're a Christian, that's a concern for you. I'd recommend that. He has a whole series of 60-minute mother. I've only got one copy left of that, sorry. 60-minute father, 60-minute family, 60-minute debt buster. 60-minute, I haven't got my glasses and I miss so much. Or if you're,
do you want me to read it for you?
You might not manage the big words. Yeah. If February 29th was an exciting day for you, there's rules of engagement, not only about how to plan a good wedding, but how to plan a good marriage. 19s were neat. Only Italy, Turkey, and Mexico have more. Drunkenness, this is out of all the developed countries across the world. Drunkenness was the highest, 13 to 15-year-olds we're talking about, was the highest in all 33 countries. And 33% of 13 to 15-year-olds reported having been drunk two or more times in the last year. Fourth highest teen pregnancy rate, the highest in Europe. We were only behind Mexico, Turkey, and America. The good news is that we were fourth out of 25 countries that were rated for the quality of school life. We had lower bullying, higher school satisfaction. But the UK had a very big gap between the high performers and the low performers in that. So in six dimensions, out of 21 countries, we were 18th for material well-being, 12th for health and safety, 17th for educational well-being, 21st for family and peer relationships, 21st, and now there's again bottom, for behaviours and risks, 20th for subjective well-being, but one country wasn't rated, so we were bottom in that as well. Overall, we were bottom. Here are the countries. Okay, so the best place to bring up a child is in Scandinavia. The worst place to bring up a child is in the UK. Where are we as a nation? Well, as far as children's well-being is concerned, we need to do better. There's a recognition that improving the quality of family life is crucial to tackling the problems we have in society, and that strengthening of family relationships is central to government policy. But in statutory support, particularly in the area of parenting support, there have been dramatic cuts of up to 40%. And in fact, parenting support has been completely wiped out in many authorities. And so there is an increasing reliance on voluntary and faith sectors to fill the gaps in social support. You depressed? But it's a great opportunity for the church once again, as it has in previous centuries, to step forward and to stand in the breach. The traditional family structure of a married mother and father with child or children remains the most common family type. 64% of dependent children lived with married parents in 2008, only 13% with cohabiting couples, 22% with lone mothers. Family breakdown. Only 9% of married parents, compared with 35% of unmarried parents, will split up before their child's family a fifth birthday. The biggest predictor of the likelihood of divorce is whether the parents are married or not. Take out all the socioeconomic data, and you're four times as likely to split if you're not married as you are. Now, of course, we all know of unmarried couples that stay together for many years, but that is less likely. There's another slightly earlier study where those figures, because this was based on 17,000, the analysis of a millennium cohort of 17,000 mothers, families. No, it's 17,000 mothers, I think, Birmingham University. But there was another 1999 study which had those figures as 8% of married parents compared with 43% of unmarried parents. You know, the gap was even bigger. And although background accounts for some of that gap, the unmarried cohabiting parents remain at least twice as likely to split up across every category of income and education. Marriage makes a difference, so do sign the Coalition for Marriage petition. We believe that it is really important that the definition of marriage should not be changed. 40% of all children will experience the divorce or separation of their parents by the time they finish school, and half of those before they're aged three. The early years in child's life is the time when the marriage is at greatest risk. Almost all parents who stay together this long, i.e. until their child's the age of 16, 97% of those that make it to the age of 16 are married, only 3% are not married. Okay, the statistics are overwhelming about the importance of marriage. Amongst married couple, divorce is concentrated in the early years of marriage. One in seven couples divorce between the second and sixth anniversaries. Amongst unmarried couples, separation is concentrated in the early years of parenthood. Okay, what can we do about it? What can we do to help? Encourage and support families needs to be part of the mission of the church. Marriage courses. Marriage preparation courses. I mean, the stats on marriages where the couple previously have gone on a marriage preparation course, even if it's a one-day course run by amateurs. And actually the stats show that the outcomes for courses run by amateurs are at least as good as the courses run by professionals. I mean, our marriage preparation course, I have to say, my church, June and I do the bit on parenting, and unfortunately we know a little bit about parenting, and it was a deputy governor of the Bank of England who does the bit on money, but the vicar does the bit on conflict and communication, and another couple do intimacy and so on. It's a great day. And they come nervously, thinking it might be a bit religious and, you know, whatever. And they're well looked after and it's lovely food and they meet the other couples. We do it two or three times. You're doing it three times this spring. And it's a brilliant day. Gets fantastic evaluations. I'm sure you do things as well, but it's really important. Parenting courses. Clive's invited me because I think he believes, as I do, that churches need to be involved in parenting courses. June and I run parenting courses, not actually at our own church, because our church hall is a disgrace. It's an embarrassment. But we're just about to embark on a £2.5 million project that will give us wonderful facilities. Then we'll run parenting courses in our own church. At the moment, we're running them in a relatively new church on an estate in Fleet, the Eltham Heath estate, just next to Morrison's. And we've had over 400 parents come through our courses there. We'll talk about how you might want to go on. Let's Stick Together is based on a book by Harry Benson. It's some work that he's a former Royal Navy helicopter pilot, but very much into, I mean, he was involved in the development in some research on family life with the government's senior chief research officer. And he developed this one-hour session about relationships that new mums do in Bristol. He's developed a team of people who are running it, and now nearly half of all the new mums, the postnatal groups in Bristol, do this course. It has had such an impact that the government picked it up. Well, Care for the Family has brought it in under its own wing. The government picked it up, and Care for the Family has now had £500,000 to promote this in two pilot areas, West Midlands and South West England. And we've managed to make sure that Hampshire is part of South West England. So I've now been trained to run Let's Stick Together. June and I were doing a Let's Stick Together course with a postnatal group in Oakley this morning. And we need more presenters for Let's Stick Together. I can't do an hour's course now, but basically it talks about the bad habits. Bad habits is the cause of most marriage breakdown in the early years. The research shows the presence of these bad habits is what causes marriage breakdown in the early years. The absence of the positive things is what causes marriage breakdown more often in the later years. So it's got the stop signs, scoring points. June nags at me to put the loo seat down. So I respond, "Oh, I'm sorry, darling, of course I will." "No, I don't." I say, "But you leave the toothpaste tube cap off." And we get into scoring points. You know what I mean? Do you do that? Many couples do. Or thinking the worst. You know, she makes a cup of coffee and doesn't wait for me. Am I in trouble? He comes with flowers. What's he been doing? What's he want? You know, thinking the worst. Perhaps we've had some experience way back with a teacher or a parent where the worst was right, but in the vast majority of cases it isn't. But it's a killer for relationships. Thinking the worst, opting out. That's the one that men do more than women. We score points in equal measure, men and women. Women tend to spread their stops over a wider range. Men tend to focus principally on opting out, you know, shutting down, refusing to discuss things. Money, no, I'm not prepared. We've had this argument before. I'm not going there again. I'm sorry, I'm off to the pub. But then it's the children, you know, and which say, no, I'm not prepared to discuss. And then it's time and so on. And some, very soon you're not discussing anything. And the relationship withers. I don't want to go, I'll get the thing. Or put downs. It may not be any words. You can do it with verbal, non-verbal signals, can't you? But they're killers for relationships. But there are good habits. You'll know about Dr. Gary Chapman, I guess many of you, and the five love languages of time, words, actions, gifts, and touch. And it's not important to understand what makes you feel loved, and also what makes your partner, your spouse, your husband or wife feel loved. Is it time? You know, is it just you feel loved when you're snuggled up together and the sofa. You don't have to say anything. He might be reading a book. You might be reading a book, laying with your head on his pillow, but just on his pillow, on his lap. But, you know, you feel loved when you're together. You don't need to say anything. Or it may be words. Time and words, really important. More important for women than for men. Won't surprise you. But, you know, the differences in the percentages are not vast, actually, but predominantly. Actions, you know, doing things for somebody, little action. I'm ashamed to admit it because some of our more women's lib friends think it's disgraceful that June cleans my shoes. I'm almost embarrassed about it, but she loves to clean my shoes. I was talking to a mum today, we were talking about it, and she said, you know, before they had children, she liked the fact that she ironed her husband's shirts and he wore them all day. And, you know, something things about, and now they've got the baby, she wasn't able to iron his shirts any longer, but they'd actually not talked about why she wasn't ironing his shirts any longer and so on. So actions. Gifts. It doesn't need to be a diamond ring. It could just be a little note or a text, or words of encouragement or appreciation or touch. May be something very, you know, gentle, not necessarily, we're not talking about sort of, you know, leading to sex or necessarily, but, you know, nevertheless, inevitably, that's, you know, men are quite heavily into that. So on your way out, if you want to express appreciation, a little back rub would be nice, thank you. And the third part is keeping Dad involved. It's very easy for Dads to get left out. One mum today was telling us how, you know, they used to sit next to one another on a sofa. Now the baby's there, and so he has to sit on another sofa. But it can be, you know, mother is so frightened that Dad's going to drop this baby. I mean, this little tiny baby holding in one hand, then add water, and then add soap. You can understand, it's a bit tricky. you know, he never does it the right way. And mums have got to... It's encouraging mums to let him make some mistakes. Let him do it his way. Don't take the child away. Don't, you know, criticise him. Otherwise, you just like to say, oh, you do it, and off he'll go and he'll opt out. Keeping Dads involved is really important. You know, it might be a bit shocking when you say, could he wash the baby's hair and hold him by the ankles and, you know, so. But nonetheless, keeping Dad involved and not excluding him is really important. So that's what this Let's Stick Together is about. If you're interested, there is a website. And if you think you might be prepared to do a day's training and help in delivering that to postnatal groups, there's a card out there that you can fill in and send off. I'd love to have you on the team for doing that. I have a role now of coordinating volunteers for Care for the Family across sort of Northern Hampshire, so I'd love to keep in touch with you. And if you are willing to get involved in any aspect of Care for the Family's work amongst parenting, befriending, promoting, befriending, parenting or marriage, Care for the Family is about parenting and marriage are the two key things, then there's a little leaflet out there that can explain. And, you know, there is a selection process and take up references and so on. But if you are selected to be a Care for the Family volunteer, then actually all your training comes free and you get invited to do things for them. So if you are interested in supporting the work and getting involved in family and parenting support, then that's certainly one way. Positive parenting courses, this is the way we run them. Most of our people, well, many of the people come through personal recommendations from others, though we promote them. I mean, initially due through schools, but it's just developed. You know, they now, our leaflets, our flyers go by email through GPs, surgeries, children's centres and so on. One woman rang and asked if it was okay if her husband brought a friend who didn't read, and the friend, her husband would just come to help him get the most out of the course because he wouldn't be able to read the things. I said, that's fine, but of course the husband, she was keen for him to do the course as well. Transformed their family life. She was the centre manager for the Heart Centre, which is our shopping centre in Fleet. So she said, can I put your posters up in the lifts? And on all the lifts in the shopping centre, there's our posters. She's never been on the course, but she thinks our courses are wonderful because it's transformed her family. So this thing has just developed, and we're running two courses at the moment, doing a time out for parents course and a Monday night time out for dad's course. We've got, normally you have over 20, I think I've only got 18 dads on this one. We had a bit of a hiccup with the emails, we've got about 28. I mean, most parenting courses run with about 12, and that's probably the best. We have to cap them at 30, and we cannot cope with the demand. We need more churches and more people running parenting courses. Some terms we run three courses. We normally do two or one or two. And we now get quite a few referrals from statutory services, particularly as, you know, the statutory sector is closing down and they need places to refer families to. We We actually invite people to make a contribution to the course. We suggest a donation of £25, and because it's a voluntary donation, they don't have to pay it. We give them a copy of the parents' handbook as part of that. £6.25 is included. And because it's a donation, they can gift aid it, and that covers the hire of the church hall. June and I cover the refreshment costs, but the rest goes as a donation to care for the family. We do the dad's course. We obviously do pizzas rather than cakes, so we start with pizza. And after one of the courses, we did a dad's and lads weekend in Herefordshire. If you want a lovely sort of self-catering place to go to, Woolhope Cockshoot near Ledbury is fabulous. My favourite place on the earth's surface. Great for walking the Malvern Hills and having a brilliant dad's and lads weekend. Midnight walks for, so this is how the facilitator training works. If you want to become licensed to run Care for the Family or Positive Parenting courses, there's two-day modules. The first one is about how facilitating groups, and the second one is about specifically working with parents. In fact, the facilitating groups one, we had, there was one a guy from a minister, I think, of a church who came and was so switched on by this, he wanted all his house group leaders to come on. He just thought this was perfect for them. In line with the National Occupational Standards for Work with Parents, there is accreditation, QCF Level 3, that's Qualifications and Curriculum Framework. Level 3 is A-level standard, so it scores points. I think it's 9 points for the two courses on the OCN. There are extra, if you want to be licensed to run the special needs courses, or Drug Proof Your Kids or Quids In, there's one extra familiarisation day. If you've already been done training in sort of group work, you can get accredited prior learning, which avoids you having to do the facilitating groups. Now, I have to say, qualified teachers still need training. I say that as a hit. They are different skills. Facilitating groups is not doing what I'm doing now. It's not you know, the way you run a lesson. They're quite different skills. So June and I did the 4 days, and I would, you know, do it. But if you are a professional and you've already done training of facilitating groups, obviously you don't need to repeat that, and you'll get that. You give evidence of it, that can be accredited, and just go. And also, I mean, if you've done full training for, you know, professional training for running, for working with parents, you may get API for the APL for the whole lot. This is the facilitating groups module, the sort of things that it covers. And the working with parents module. You know, a little bit on parenting styles, and we've had a flavour of that tonight. Attachment theory, we've mentioned, okay. Care for the Family has also got several networks, Bereaved Parents Network, which puts parents who've lost a child in touch with parents, not only who've lost a child, but have lost a child in a similar way. So if it's through an illness or a motor accident or suicide, you know, they'll be linked with parents who've just further down the road. You wouldn't say that they've recovered or got over it, but they're just further on in the journey. Another way, a support network for parents of children with special needs, single parent family network. They do weekends and so on, a different journey for those. When they lose a partner early in life, they've got young children, so that's a particular network for them, and life in a step family, and those. So those are sort of, you know, telephone networks. They have weekends and, you know, and so on. So those are all the sort of things Care for the Family does as well. This is something that I've, when I was working for Care for the Family, I was encouraging churches to do, and that was to sponsor a resources board. This was what I was encouraging them, in, you know, suitable for primary schools, in which some of the books that I've been talking to you about but not managing to read from, and I was going to read from 60 Minute Family, which I think is a great book, and you've nearly bought them all, so I'm not going to bother reading that now, but I might do, I'll see. Or for a larger secondary school, perhaps a bigger board, you could even put, you know, there's space for you if you want to. You can put two more Perspex holders there, or you could put, you know, Supporting Family Life, St Mary's Church at Eastrop, you know, you're sponsoring it. But with a selection of the, either the positive parenting leaflets that you've got out there or information about the Care for the Family networks. And the idea is that, you know, that these can be available in places where parents, meet with teachers or others in the school, and they can borrow a book. or they can take a leaflet, but it's a way of supporting family life. You know, just it might be something that you want to consider. Which has got me to questions. Shall I just, before I get to questions, let me read the little book? Because I haven't got my glasses now. While you're thinking of your question. Do you know, sometimes on parenting courses, I've said to, picked up one of the books, ask about, pick a book, and then I say, pick a page number. Rob Parsons is brilliant at telling stories. And sometimes I've just said, you know, gone to a spontaneous page. But I, you know, the trouble is reading these books, I'm a bit, you know, a bit emotional. I picked up that. Recently, a mother came up to me at the end of one of the talks I give for the parents of teenagers and told me something of her story. If you want those talks, they're actually on a DVD there. Her son was 16 and addicted to illegal drugs. In fact, he'd spent some time in a young offenders institution. He'd been released the day before she came to the seminar. She said, "Last evening I said to my son, Jack, please come in tonight before 11 o'clock. I worry when you're out late." And then she said, "Rob, last night he came in on time, and it wasn't until I heard you tonight talking about encouraging our children that I realised I hadn't thanked him for that. When I go home tonight, I'm going to tell him how much I appreciated his caring for me in this way." This is the principle that's called catching your children doing something right. As mothers, fathers, step-parents, even as employers, we're used to catching people doing something wrong and criticising them for it. But the faster and more effective way to improve behaviour is to catch them doing something right and encourage them in it. Many of us, even as adults, are crushed by the constant pointing out of where we went wrong. This is a great tragedy. When the ear never hears praise, the heart loses the will to try. When you get the hang of catching people doing something right, you can often find the opportunity to encourage, even when it's not that easy. The elderly grandmother went to watch her grandson at the school sports day. Tom didn't get into the final of the 100 metres or the 200 metres, and he was unplaced in the longer races as well. In fact, the only event in which he looked remotely comfortable was the egg and spoon race, but even then he came last. As Tom and his grandmother walked away together, the little boy's head was down until she put her arm round him and whispered, "You were the only one whose egg didn't fall off the spoon." That young boy never did make it as a sportsman, but against the odds, he did achieve great things in other areas of his life. I'm not surprised. It's hard to fail with a grandmother like that.
Thank you very much, Ken. Right, Nick's got the roving mic. So we'll start with this sort of section here, and then go to you, and then to you. So somebody here, John there.
Yes, thanks, Ken. You mentioned where the UK comes in a comparison of nations in terms of performances within families,
children's
and
well-being,
children, which is well, it's pathetic, isn't it? In a way, all that you're suggesting is dealing with the symptoms. You know, what is the cause? Has anybody done? I presume someone's done work on. Why is it that the UK comes so low down, and is there a deeper problem that we should be tackling?
I'm delighted to say that whenever we run a parenting course and we get a difficult question, we say to the group, what do the others of you think? I think relationships, I mean, I take the point and I'm not qualified to answer, except that I do believe that if we can work from the quality of the parent-child relationship and the parent-parent relationship, we are actually tackling the roots. There is a social malaise, which may be something about the nature of, you know, the British personality or character, you know, has strengths and has weaknesses, I don't know. We've got a lot of social ills. Alcohol clearly is a massive one. I don't know. Our relaxed attitude to divorce can't help. Do you know that in two countries, Malta and the Philippines, divorce is illegal. You can't get divorced. So you would expect there to be more unhappy marriages, wouldn't you, in those countries? Strangely, the stats show that when people are asked in the various countries about their satisfaction levels, they're actually lower than, you know, so it's quite interesting. I only read that today in some, there's a lot of research base of that. So there is a sort of a moral regeneration that's needed, and the church needs to be stepping forward to lead that, I think.
I just wanted to ask you, I'm fascinated with the work you do. You are a Christian yourself.
I'm sorry that doesn't show.
No, it does.
Oh, it does.
I said,
thank goodness. Praise the Lord. No. Sorry.
What I'd like to know is how far you put your Christian ethos, your underpinning, your faith, out into the arena when you're running these courses. Because I presume they're for everyone, whether they're Christian or not.
Absolutely.
And how far, or do you just gauge it on the particular group, okay, as to how far you can actually put the bedrock of what you believe is underpinning it all out there?
There's a book by Lawrence Singlehurst called Sowing, Reaping, Keeping. We're using it in the church at the moment for a series of sermons. And it talks about, you know, this sort of funnel of the importance of doing the sowing. You know, sowing one, there's a scale of 1 to 10. And, you know, okay, 10 is when somebody's full on making the commitments on. Now, our evangelism, you know, some of our foolishness in the past, we sometimes sort of go in at this 9, 10 end. We need to start at the 1, 2 end, and there's the sowing. And the first stages are about God is good and we're okay. You know, not stuffing anything else down your throat. Now, positive parenting courses are about we're okay. For many people, it's the first time they've ever been into a church. They come into the church where we run them, which is rather like this, and it's a nice place to be, and people care for them. And they come a bit nervously and say, is this going to be religious? I said, well, we're Christians, the charity's Christian, but we're not going to mention God unless you bring him up. I'd love to talk to you about him, but that's for you. This course isn't about that. This is talking about parents and children. Just relax. But sometimes if the church is running an alpha course, at the end of the final session, we'll be built relationships. We say, if any of you are interested more in the Christian faith, they're running an alpha course here. You can take a leaflet and you go. And so, you know, it's not seeking to convert people, but it is actually part of caring for the world. But when we do things well, people are attracted to the person who's made a difference in our lives and is motivated to do what we do, motivated us to do what we do. Does that make sense? I'd recommend that book, Lawrence Singlehurst. Sadly, Care for the Family doesn't publish it, but Sowing, Reaping, Keeping.
This section, got a question or two?
Ken, I was very encouraged to see that there is something in there for men.
And I love doing men's courses.
And it's kind of long overdue, isn't it? Rather than bringing a man and a woman, a father and a mother, a husband and wife together into the same room. Can you just explain a little bit about the kind of the core content of that?
Yeah, we do. I mean, first of all, undoubtedly the best way is for a mum and dad to come together on the courses where they can come together because they can go home and talk about it. What we've got at the moment, I've got two or three mums who are dads who are doing the dad's course. And they're not identical, but they do a lot of similar stuff. But the dad's course does focus on the particular issues with dads, the difference that dads make, some of the issues of, you know, men. That statistic I said about, you know, suicide being the second. We don't touch that in the main course. That comes up in the dad's course. But, you know, it is a bit, you know, manly and macho and, you know, stuff. And it's... so, yeah, it is different, and I love doing the men's courses. It's great fun. We cover much of the same things. In fact, we just do 5 sessions, and if you want to stop around afterwards, I can pull up the PowerPoint and have a look through. But, you know, some of the stuff we've done now, but they'd love that dad twist on it, because we're just looking at dads, the role of dads. So probably a bigger emphasis on are you fun to be with? giving kids adventures, building memories and so on. You know, so there's a slightly different balance, but essentially, you know, the similar sort of message. And certainly it gives the parents, if they're doing the two courses separately, it gives them a language, a vocabulary to be able to sort of compare what they're doing and talk about. I mean, they're both going to do parenting styles and be able to have a discussion. Because what can often happen, I mean, I didn't go into this, but what can often happen in parenting styles is you get a father, and this is the sort of thing we cover on the dad's course, who is used to giving instructions, barking orders, having control, and all the things that we're respected for at work. I know, mums, you work as well. But, you know, that sort of power and control and instant and so on. We come back into the home, we'd expect instant obedience, spotting things that are wrong, putting them right, you know, having control and so on. So we tend to be a bit more towards that aggressive authoritarian end because we don't change our mindset between work and home. The mother, on the other hand, then spots dad. She might be a bit sort of passive, permissive tendency anyway, but certainly she recognises that what the kids need is not what dad's dishing out. They need a softer approach. So she, oh, you come to me, you know, whatever. And then he gets into, these kids get away with anything with you, what you need to whatever, and goes there, and she goes further. And the poor child gets caught between two widening, ineffective parenting styles. That's a terrible generalisation, but I have to say parents have recognised that scenario. And so if those parents can talk about how they can be more consistent, how they can support one another and work with a similar style, the child is going to be much more comfortable and secure and know where they are, and their parents are not going to be played off one against the other either. So, yeah. So we have a little bit of understanding why men are like, do things the way they do, you know, and perhaps how we need to adjust and so on. So, yeah.
Another question from here? If not, move on.
They're asleep. Philip. Do you know, this man used to be at our church,
yes,
and you nicked him. And his wife, Penny. We used to love them.
Don't take it out of us.
Yeah, clearly not enough.
So I think they're leaving us as well, going to the seaside, you know. So.
What would be your view, Ken, of same-sex couples adopting, fostering, or indeed having children?
I hope you've signed the Coalition for Marriage. I mean, children, in my view, children need a father and a mother. And I believe that marriage was a creation of God in a particular model. And people who have a different view, I will respect and enable them to do what they want to do. But I don't believe it's the best for children. And I think it's happening often enough for us, you know, 10 years down the line, I think we'll have the evidence to show that. Because I fear that we should be reaping the rewards. We're experimenting with children's lives at the moment with a model I'm not sure is helpful.
Do you get same-sex couples on your parenting courses?
I don't think we haven't yet. No. Perhaps they think they wouldn't be welcome. They would be welcome, but I wouldn't approve their lifestyle any more than I would a heterosexual sub couple who are, you know, casual in their relationships. So on. I'd accept them. I'd embrace them. I'd encourage them, I didn't love them. But I don't ask me to approve their lifestyle. Good job you came to your church. Heavy questions. You know.
Thanks very much for what you said, Ken.
Thank you.
Quick question.
Encouragement. You know, it's great. Spotting the positive. Right?
How do you reconcile the idea that you mentioned of building self-esteem in our children with the need to teach them that they are sinners in need of God's grace?
I've never had a trouble in a young person knowing that their lives don't match the standards of Jesus. I haven't. I mean, I met adults who think they're fine. The problem with children is normally that they are, you know, is low self-esteem, not you know, the arrogance of pride and self-satisfaction. So I haven't found the problem that you're describing, I have to say. There was enough opportunity to tell my children that they were sinners, as they recognised that so was I. Before we started doing parenting courses, we actually sent them emails saying what had they appreciated about our parenting and what had they resented. And we had some lovely stuff back. My elder son, who's, you know, living with us at the moment, but wait a minute, said, I never took him to football matches. I said, you were never interested in football. We are now both season ticket holders of Reading, and we regularly go to football as the other, we go, you know, and so on. So he was the one, because I, you know, occasionally, I think I remember about the need to encourage our children. So on my way up, when I was going up to Birmingham, when headquarters of Positive Parenting was up there, going up on the train, I texted my daughters saying, the sort of thing I said when they were very young, do you know how much your daddy loves you? And to the boys, although I could have said that, I said, do you know how proud your dad is of you? And I got back the loveliest texts and emails from them, how this had made their day, appreciated them. Simon, the one I was just telling you about, his reply, though, said, yes. Are you running another parenting course, then? Below that wit and cynicism, he's actually very emotional and very warm, you know. He's our second. Because I'd not had tactile parents, I knew I wouldn't be able to kiss a boy. So I prayed that we'd have a girl first, as we did. And of course, once we'd had her, I knew there was no problem, not going to be any problem kissing a boy when the next one came along as a boy. And they still kissed me. And when Simon went to university, and we took him down to Bournemouth, and were, you know, unloading the car, and these other lads, 18-year-olds, were arriving that he was going to be spending the next 3 years with, he said goodbye to me and kissed me on the lips. And I didn't expect that in public. I came away and thought, yes. It still doesn't stop him being quick-witted and cynical, however.
Okay, one last question from anybody sort of in this part? Okay, anybody? Last question. Of course, that puts you under pressure to ask a really good one.
We like to treat children all the same.
I could hear him perfectly. A man who...
All right. Very good. If you have three kids, you want to treat them all the same.
Do you?
But they are different.
Good.
So...
We don't...
How do you approach discipline with different children?
Absolutely. You need to come on a course. You definitely need to, because they are different, have different temperaments, and some things work with some and don't work with others. When I was sent this book that I had to read before we went for the training for doing this, there was a point where I went, yes! Because it was something I'd believed, and I'd never heard anything anyone else say, and I felt justified in it. We told our children we would not be fair. We didn't pretend to be fair. We don't do fair. I heard a granddad on a radio phone-in program once say, I won't do something with one of my grandchildren that I can't do with them all. And I thought, what a shame. Because I have to tell you, we did different things with our children. And sometimes, you know, we did one-on-one things and sometimes one-on-two things. They were all special. And probably when we look back, yeah, they probably, you know, they all had the bike rides and we all did the adventures of, you know, taking the bikes on the train and cycling around the New Forest and then taking them on the ferry and cycling around the Isle of Wight and then eventually crossing the Channel and cycling halfway to Paris and jumping on a train and going into the city. You know, they all had their turns, but we didn't work it out on the turns. And we all did special things with them and some of them did different things because they were all special. I mean, thank goodness God is not fair. Just think, I'd be condemned if God was fair, but I'm saved by God's grace. Now, if God's not fair, where do we get being fair? You know, our children never said, it's not fair. I've heard so many children say, it's not fair. And we don't start out. And I read this, and on one of these pages, he says here, in his family, he says, we don't do fair. And I thought he had six children, or has six children. And I thought, oh, yeah, there's the page. We don't do fair. Something else that unites us as a family is our family mottos. I once answered that, anyway, we want to go, we don't do fair. So I was really encouraged by that. So all children are different, need to be treated differently and do special things with those children and have adventures with the children and build memories with their children. Our children love one another and they love us. Before they were all married, They went off. Simon organised the same one, organised for them all to go to Centre Park. He made it a surprise. He said they were going to Leighton, said they were going to a friend's house who got a swimming pool to bring the swimming things, and they met in a Tesco car park, and it was they all went together, and they've been away, all four couples, now with their grandchildren each year because they love meeting one they love. And they go out as couples and couples, and they were walking along the cliffs. Abby, our youngest husband's parents, have got a cottage in Cornwall, and she and Kevin and Simon and Louise were away on a weekend together, and they were walking along this clifftop, except that Simon and Abby, our two children, natural children, were down the cliff and exploring the caves, and Abby came back and told us, she said, it was great, and we were saying to one another, isn't this great? It's just like when we were kids. And Kevin and Louise were walking along the cliff path thinking they were demented, you know, because they didn't have those memories. I mean, Louise didn't have a dad. Her dad died when she was very young. So building memories, having adventures is important. Our kids are still precious. We still talk about things we did as a family.
Well, thank you very much, Ken, indeed. I mean, as a church, there are members who run divorce recovery workshops and have done for a decade or more.
Brilliant.
There are others who do students exploring marriage. But it's been quite a while since we've done any parenting courses, and certainly even longer since we've done any that we've invited the community to. So I hope that you've inspired some people to think, that's something I could do or we could do.
Well, if you have, pick up those, which explains all the courses and the training that Positive Parenting does. If you're interested in becoming a Care for the Family volunteer, pick up one of those. A Let's Stick Together presenter, pick up one of those. And if you'd like us, if you'd like to host some Positive Parenting facilitator training here, so you don't have to go to Cardiff or Birmingham or London, if you knew a friendly vicar who, you know, didn't have too many embarrassing stories, then you know, I'm sure we could arrange it. In fact, I've got the autumn in mind. If we could, we need about 12 people, and we not necessarily just from this church. We can get them from other churches. We're perhaps, you know, from local statutory agencies. We're looking to get their people trained. We did it in Fleet last term, and with a complete mix of people from the voluntary sector and the statutory sector. And if you wanted to host one each of those two courses here, so you could get people licensed and trained and licensed to run the courses, we'd love to come and do them here, but you'd need to nag someone.
So pick up the leaflets, and if you do fill any in, do let me know, because it would be awfully silly if you turned up to some kind of training session only to discover that all your friends were on it but nobody thought to talk to each other. So that's it. I hope also that even if you're not somebody who might think, this is something I could develop further, that you've given us a taste. And I was doing a kind of self-analysis of my parenting, really. But, I have got a daughter who will give me feedback afterwards.
Yes.
But the other three aren't here. So, thank you very much indeed for coming. Hope that you've enjoyed and benefited from it. Good night.
Thank you. Thank you. Thanks for the opportunity.
The bookstall's still open.
Yes,
for a
with
bit.
My beautiful assistant.
Wife, yes.